From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
In the mainstream media, the negative news are always surfacing. And you go on CoinDesk and you see 9 out of 10 positive news, right? And then mainstream news, every other week, you get, you know, a scam here and there. And that's just, it's just sad. And that happened 10 years ago, still happening.
Good evening for me and good morning for my guest, actually. I'm your host, Charlie Shrem. You're listening to another epic episode of the Charlie Shrem Show, powered by Waxman. We're together for 5 years now. We've enjoyed spending time together, dissecting, storytelling, and understanding this wild world of Bitcoin and crypto. And today we have two awesome guests. We have Holger Arians and we have Jackson Zhang. Holger, you're the CEO of Banxa, super cool company based out of Australia. You guys provide all payments infrastructure for the whole crypto space, from companies like Binance to Edge to KuCoin. You offer the ability to do things like pay by Apple Pay, certain types of debit cards, bank transfers. You are like the de facto one of the largest now on and off ramps globally for people moving money in and out of the space. And Jackson, you guys offer a bespoke VIP experience. You guys are the world's premier cryptocurrency brokerage, Caleb and Brown. You were the first employee, actually, at Caleb and Brown. Now you guys serve over 22,000 clients across more than 100 countries. It's super cool because what you guys do is actually how I first started trading, like doing OTC. It's like that chat experience, having like a broker that you can talk to and understand, especially sometimes when you're buying large blocks of certain crypto projects or whatever. You're also on the board of Blockchain Australia. How are you guys feeling today? How are you guys feeling about the global crypto, you know, industry, where we are right now, like exactly halfway into 2023?
Go ahead. Look, I'm feeling good. Like you guys, I've been in this for almost 10 years now. You've been longer in this even. It's never been that good. And I'm very optimistic here. It's challenging and it changes every day. We just spoke about that. But overall, if you zoom out, it's great. And so many amazing opportunities. And, we haven't even scratched the surface yet. It's a very challenging space in terms of regulation, obviously. And that is, it's important. We need more mainstream adoption. We need better user experience. We need more trust and all that. But look, overall, I'm super excited. We had much more challenging times in the past when crypto was more in a dark corner of the internet and there was no real use case for it other than maybe speculation. Today, we are much broader and it's exciting for me.
That's a very good point. You've been around since 2014. And Jackson, I want to hear how you're feeling too. You know, it was a lot harder back then. There were no real use cases for crypto back then. But Jackson, how are you feeling going into the halfway point of the year now? A little bit more into it.
Yeah. I'm glad we went the optimistic route, Holger, because I like to be an optimist as well. And I agree. I think crypto has been, it's the best it's ever been, right? When we first started in the space, we would spend probably the first 80% of the conversation just explaining what crypto is. Nobody does that anymore. We go straight into explaining what our businesses do, how we provide value for the industry, how we help our customers. So I'm feeling good about the space. I think definitely this year now, we have moved from like a reason to actually be negative, a reason to actually be concerned or panicking, to now it's maybe we're just slightly frustrated that progress is not happening as fast as it could be. But I think the direction is getting better, right? So I'm an optimist, and I think we're seeing a lot of good developments starting to take place as a result of the lessons we learned last year.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that you see BlackRock filing an ETF, and the exciting things to me are happening on like such a small level, but really these things are happening on a global level. I see my friends in Dubai and Australia traveling all over the world in these large groups. I was talking to someone and he was like, do you know how many people around the world get paid in USDT now? It's like millions of people around the world understand as USDT is like all of a sudden crypto has given them the ability to have stable income, where before they'd have to make money in their like local currency. That just, it's not even about just like earning the money and putting into your bank account and hoping it doesn't. It's like just knowing how much you're going to earn on a weekly basis. And you service a lot of those people. You guys both service a lot of those people. It's not just speculating. It's especially in Australia when you have a huge amount of remittance money coming in and out. I mean, it's definitely really exciting. I would love to hear both your answers, but why has crypto adoption leapfrogged so much in Australia versus like the US? Does it come from like a regulatory, or is it more of like an Australian attitude you think there is? Jackson, what do you think?
Go ahead.
So this would be a cultural speculation.
I love cultural speculation. Is what we do. It's like my other show, Cultural Speculation with Charlie Shrum. It shouldn't be. No, I'm
sure. We have in Australia a tendency to invest more in the property market, the real estate market, than the equities market. And when the Australians got access to a global crypto market, I think it was a lot more interesting to them, because historically, the equities market in Australia tends to underperform the US. So,
interesting.
So we mostly have people invest in real estate, right? And the Australian dream is described as owning your own home. We also have a lot of immigration in Australia. So I come from an immigrant family. I'm first generation Australian. So, we have this joke, which is as an Australian, your Australian dream is to own your own home. And as a Chinese person, the Chinese dream is to own your own home in Australia. There's a heavy focus on wealth accumulation, but it's also about protecting your assets. And there is a recognition of diversification or being dislocated from any risks that may be associated to your government, right? So that's why Chinese immigrate overseas. That's why they go to the US, they go to Canada, they go to the UK, they go to Australia. They inherently understand this. It's part of the culture. And that's my speculation on why there's excitement about crypto in Australia.
Great answer, Jackson. My view on top of that, I think that is very accurate, is whenever you travel, you find an Australian somewhere. The Australians are the explorers. They're trying new things. And you find many brands, international brands, trialing their products in Australia.
Yeah, you do see that.
I feel that Australians are just happy to try out new things. And crypto is one of these things, because it has this amazing appeal. All these different use cases. And like Jackson said, in Australia, the property industry is large, but also the financial services industry. So you have many people that are very savvy with their money. And crypto is just an alternative, and people get it. And they're Australians also like horse racing. So they're doing stuff with their money. And that is certainly helping with adoption.
How did you get involved in this space? You've been doing this since 2014, so like almost 10 years now.
Yeah, but my co-founder Dominic, he ordered some black boxes. He said they're Bitcoin miners. For me, they were just black boxes. Ordered them to the office. And back then, we were in a six-story building. We just had one floor. And we had this little room where we had these Bitcoin miners. they create a lot of heat. So we had this massive fan and it was summer and the air conditioning was going and it was a wild time. And a few times a day, the whole building would basically have a power outage. So we're really learning by doing. Obviously, nobody knew why the power was out and why the electricity costs went up for this building. But it was learning by doing, and we got into it and we're just super excited. So we had all these Bitcoins and eventually just sold them. We broke it down for Australians to get their hands on crypto. And that was, you know, almost 10 years ago. And it was very innovative. And but again, we were running into so many challenges, and some of those challenges we're still running into today, which we'll probably touch on later.
Were you mining Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Do you remember like the details? Like I remember I was mining on an ASIC that was the first ASIC, I think. And it was like crazy amount of Bitcoin a day. I forgot it was like maybe 15 or 20 Bitcoin a day. But Bitcoin was only worth a couple of $100. So that was still a large amount of money. Like I was making like $8,000 a day, which no single miner makes that much money. Like you have to scale, you know, your mining. So we were running it for days and days and days. And I just don't remember. I guess when you're living history, you don't realize, you don't like say like, let me save these things. Like, let me save this piece of paper. Let me, you know, people like, Charlie, can I buy your old Bitcoin license plate? I was like, I never thought to save my license plate. You don't think to like do these things. So like definitely industry has changed so much in 10 years. It's definitely matured so much.
Yeah, absolutely. It's come a super long way. And with time, so many more people and bright minds entered the space. And we're really seeing these amazing use cases now coming out of that. And Bitcoin mining is still a thing. It's still amazing. But compared to 10 years ago, it's just mind-blowing what is possible. And we're just starting again.
So where does Banksys fit now? This back-end infrastructure, so exchanges and Bitcoin companies and crypto companies don't have to deal with like connecting with traditional people's bank accounts and payment systems. It's like kind of like the back-end rails there.
Yeah, that's right. So it's basically B2B2C. So we're embedded in the big platforms, the MetaMask, the Binances. So if you want to buy crypto wherever you are in the world through these platforms, you click on buy crypto and you have Banksys there as an option. You get redirected to us.
Yeah, I used you the other day. I'm not even knowing that we were having a podcast, I promise.
That's nice.
I was buying some crypto and you were the second option. The first option was one that I had already known and used, but that always leads me to a dead end because it's like a long process. But yours was like really quick.
I'm glad.
If these apps told you when you could withdraw, because sometimes people don't want to buy Bitcoin and leave it in that wallet. They want to use it for something. Like if I'm playing online poker, how do I get Bitcoin instantly? My company BitInstant was the only way that I knew. Now you have to go to a Bitcoin ATM or a crypto ATM or use Jackson's company. You got to text your broker and say, give me some Bitcoin right now, right?
Yeah, with banks, we send it pretty much immediately. If your KYC check goes through right away and all that sort of stuff, we do all the fraud checks. We're regulated. The service we're doing is regulated. And that's why we're doing it and not the exchanges necessarily at this point. And we're local. We have local payments. So if you're in the US, we obviously have Wire and ACH. In a country like the Netherlands, we have Interac, which is a bank-to-bank transfer. And 90% of e-commerce happens through these bank-to-bank transfers. And the big advantage is the conversion rate of that payment is 100%. If you send something bank-to-bank, it always goes through. But with a credit card, it's like 20% conversion rate because it's a high-risk merchant category. And that's where it just bounces. And that's why we are mostly local. If you are local, if you have a local bank transfer, you need to have a license or be regulated. So we're doing that. And it's obviously the long road, but it's what eventually is valuable and mostly to the customer because they just want their crypto, like you said, and they want it now.
It's exactly the truth. Jackson, tell me about Caleb and Brown and the story. You were the first employee and now running the shop.
Yeah, so Caleb and Brown, put simply, is a crypto brokerage that assigns a relationship manager to every single customer, right? So every client, when you're engaging with the business, you're talking to the same person. We have a platform as well. So if you want to go the digital route, you can do that. But the crucial thing is that you have one person who looks after your account, looks after your portfolio, understands not just where your assets are, but also where your knowledge is at. So for newcomers in the space, there are about a million ways to make mistakes in crypto. And then for the experience, there's a lot of leverage you can get and the good kind of leverage from speaking with peers dedicated to keeping up with recent developments. So, you know, there was a period of time when DeFi was a new term, right? So we are the people who are explaining, hey, what's this up and coming sector within the industry?
What do people want to learn now?
Well, recently there was zero knowledge EVMs, right? So that just, you know, to the newcomer, that's just a bunch of letters. ZK-EVM, thank you. And before that, like there was, you know, what's like layer one and layer two, that's kind of like a maybe 2-year-old term. ZK-EVM is actually a lot older, but in terms of the public knowing about it, it's you know, maybe only a few months, right? So we get to talk about the benefits.
ZK-EVM is an EVM chain that's fully compatible with like a roll-ups? Is that the definition?
So it's
I passed the test.
So Ethereum Virtual Machine is EVM, basically.
Well, that we know. The listeners know that.
Oh, fantastic. Good. So it's useful because it's interoperable with the language that everyone speaks. And the ZK part is the zero knowledge part. So it's about a lot, about better composability. It's about better compression. It's basically the other route of rollups. You can have optimistic rollups and you can have zero knowledge rollups. So there are a lot of like new things, right? And our job is to understand the new things and then break it down for you and help you understand it.
Why are Telegram bots blowing up then right now? It's crazy. Like Unibot.
I'm not sure about this.
It's like Telegram trading bots. They're like decentralized. It's like imagine Uniswap, but in a Telegram bot that's open source that the token holder gets rewarded as like, I don't know. It's been like gets rewarded by like global transaction fees. So it's like, instead of having to like, you know, when you hit MetaMask and you like hit get quote, you know, and you're getting a quote and it's pulling in from like all the different decentralized exchanges and aggregators and everything, the best quote where the best liquidity is, the bot just does it for you. Like you just say, hey, trade this for this and you keep your crypto in your own wallet. I don't know. I haven't tried or played with them, but the listeners are sending it in and people are really interested and Unibot like went crazy in price. I'm still seeing a lot of people wanting to understand rollups and how they affect. And also we're seeing a lot of like Bitcoin sidechainy stuff that's really popular too.
Yeah, that's right. The really exciting thing about rollups is that it gives crypto the opportunity to catch up to fintech in user experience. And the way I like to think about fintech is things are given a name mostly because it is opposite to the previous thing that you would expect it to be described by. So we think of banks. It's a business that gives us the services around our finances. Now, you would normally expect that all the functions you associate with fintech to just be done by banks, but it doesn't get done by banks. So we have to invent a new terminology and say, this is fintech because they're better at technology than the banks are. So what ends up happening is the cumbersome nature of banks prevents them from innovating rapidly. So that kind of gets developed in the fintech world. And then, you know, if there's a successful one, maybe they get acquired in. In crypto, we have been built in natively in a manner that is the same as how fintech develops their technology, which is interoperable with everything. It's API based. Well, fintech is API based, but crypto is smart contract based. It's interoperability based. So the way you think about fintech being the application layer of banks, crypto has that whole built in a single stack. And dApps are the application layer of your private keys. So The exciting thing about rollups is that we get to solve some of the scalability issues that have been preventing us from catching up to some of the user experience.
I'm really excited that this podcast, The Charlie Shrem Show, is now powered by Waxman. I think I met the CEO, David Waxman, back in 2015 or something at an Ethereum meetup, and he told me that the future belongs to the fearless, and that is why they are producing the show right by my side. What an amazing team we have now. It's so amazing. You guys have been hearing some great updates, have been following along. If you don't know, Waxman is the leading global strategy and communications firm advising the next generation of companies in Web3, disruptive technology, Bitcoin, crypto, fintech, artificial intelligence, and venture capital. Waxman's clients are ambitious leaders and businesses that are on the frontier of this whole new economy because they really do believe that the future belongs to us and we're the ones building it. With services across everything from digital marketing, public relations, social media, investor relations, financial communications, recruiting, and public affairs, they're helping companies and individuals like myself seize the business opportunities that we deserve, overcome challenges, that we all are going to face and achieve sustained success. Head over to Waxman to learn more. You guys are going to love them. We have them in the show notes. Check it all out. It's WACHSMAN.com. That's WACHSMAN.com. It's true.
Advantages.
Yeah. It's true because, you know, we're supposed to be able to do like instant transactions, instant data. And if we're relying on data to be kept on chain too, we need to be able to pull that data. And if things can't be instant, but what's cool about rollups is the way it kind of like breaks up when things are settled on the main, you know, on the main chain, when it needs to be settled. You know, some things can be settled a lot faster and shorter, and they have different situations, but it kind of like, it gave me like a funny reminder that when I was running my company, similar to yours, Holger, I was dealing with a lot of like fraud and stuff like that. How do you deal with that? Because once people are in crypto, then they're good. You don't have to deal with, you know, the reversibility of that. But getting people into it, you're like on the front lines dealing with like the army.
Yeah, absolutely. And before I answer this directly, I think this is also blown out of proportion, this whole fraud piece. And banks like to use that as an excuse.
They do. It's so stupid.
Right. And it's, you know, just compare the actual fraud, the actual money laundering and everything bad in crypto to what's happening in the real world, in the traditional world.
Oh my God.
With organizations that are 1,000 times bigger than ours and that still fail to comply and detect. So the way we're dealing with it, Charlie, it's experience. 10 years in this space, we've seen a lot. Like back in 2015, we've seen entire Expedia.com websites rebuilt because Expedia announced that they're now accepting Bitcoin for flights. They were one of the first.
I missed that.
The scammers would just copy that website and people were buying flights from Australia to New York for $200. And obviously, that doesn't
work. So that's what was happening. That's why they got rid of it, because it was like people are creating fraud and stuff like that around it. That's crazy.
Yeah. And the scammers are always a step ahead. And there are so many opportunities, right? But experience just helps with this whole piece. And over the last 10 years, we've really developed software on it. It's our own technology. But then we're just using the best of the market as well that many crypto companies are using. And there's so much shared intelligence that we are now using. And we are working very closely with law enforcement as well. So overall, we have a really good grip on it. I think there are great tools like Chainalysis and all that sort of stuff that really helps.
You probably have created some like internal immediate scoring mechanism for knowing if someone's like low, medium, or high at risk. I wonder if you could like somehow open source that too. I don't know. I'm always thinking how companies can share data down the road. Like the proprietary data that you create that you want to hold it for yourself, but let other people have access to it and charge. You can charge.
Yeah.
That's the future of data in crypto. I don't know. That's cool. My friend has a similar like type of data. They run like a Bitcoin ATM company. So they have like real-time data of like people buying crypto. I'm like, you should somehow open that data, let people pay for it. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But that's really interesting. Like you get to develop that. And I didn't know. You shared some new information. I always wondered why Expedia. But I realize that now because I actually bought a flight, paid in Bitcoin, from a site that ended up being a scam site. It was like a little too good to be true, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and you're experienced and conscious of the space and everything. Just think about, you know, my mom when she buys something on Amazon, cross fingers that it's Amazon on the other side. And it's just scammers are getting very sophisticated even in the real world. But again, the extent of that part of the space is absolutely tiny compared to what's happening outside of this in the traditional
industry. Yeah, that's just nothing.
I just think the media attention around it. In the mainstream media, the negative news are always surfacing. And you go on CoinDesk and you see 9 out of 10 positive news, right? And then mainstream news every other week, you get, you know, a scam here and there. And that's just, it's just sad. And that happened 10 years ago, still happening.
It's not just us, the readers. It's the journalists too. My friend was a journalist at one of these major papers and she like literally walked off as an anchor one day. And she's like, I can't talk about depressing news anymore. And she started this like nonprofit news company called No Blues News, because it's supposed to be news. That's no blues. I mean, it's a great idea because I'm like, so the mainstream media, they have nothing else to write about. It's all negative. all the time. Yeah. But do you guys go to like meetups a lot together and stuff like that? Do you see like what's the they opened up a Bitcoin club here in my town in Sarasota, Florida. It's Bitcoin Ben's Crypto Club. It's crazy. With 10 years, its industry is insane.
Yeah, absolutely. We do. You know, this is a funny story actually. So Melbourne's a really small place. So Holger and I, we work in the same building now, but even before that, I think like maybe 7 years before that was the first time I met Holger. The first time I was looking for a job in the crypto industry, and there were like basically two companies hiring at the time, and one of them was in the building that this company was in. But no, we've been in the space for a long time, and we go to the meetups together. And then eventually last year, you know, we said, look, there's a whole bunch of crypto founders and crypto entrepreneurs that have gathered up a lot of experience in the industry. We've figured out how to get around the challenges. Why don't we start an incubator and a Web3 fund together? And we built something called Upside DAO. It's a play on Upside Down.
I love that.
Being in Australia. So in our building on another floor, there's now a community hub where startups can join and be a part of and be able to access crypto founders and CEOs and consultants in the space that can really help them get their project built out.
Tell me more about the Upside DAO. I'm on your website and this is awesome. This is so cool.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, Holger, do you want to share a bit about it?
I'm like browsing the website as you're talking.
I mean, you know how crypto is all about community, right? And that's what I love. And like Jackson said, Melbourne is a small place and everyone knows each other, especially in crypto. And we're sharing the same war stories and we've all been debanked over time and lost bank accounts and all that sort of stuff.
You can say that again.
So we came together and said, hey, we sort of need to formally support each other. And
I love
Australia's
this.
Been punching way above its weight. You have Synthetics, you have Illuvium, you have Immutable X, you have Caleb and Brown and Banks are coming out of Australia and many other great companies. And the sort of first generation crypto founders, they've just come together and said, hey, we all get sort of deals that we could invest in. And let's just put some money together. So we raised some money. But also, because it's all about community, let's have a floor in our building. It's 700 square meters where, like Jackson said, like I think there are now 40 different people working on their projects. We have the crypto lawyers, the accountants. So it's a real little ecosystem, a hub for anyone who wants to do something in crypto, even if government eventually wants to, you know something, or the banks want to dabble a little bit, they can come there and learn.
It's really important because if you have any real business in any industry, at some point, your bank or who you're raising money from, your investors, your insurance company are going to want to come to your office and see what you have going on. And if they can come to a place like this, if I had a place like this, it would have been a lot easier in the early days if we had all come together. So that's really cool. I'm excited to see what it looks like next time I visit. I got to visit Australia now and come to the Upside DAO.
Yeah, absolutely. You're very welcome, Charlie. That would be awesome.
Tell me what else can we talk about right now? Like what else is really exciting? Because like the Upside DAO got me really excited.
Well, we could talk about regulation. It's totally not exciting, but it's something that is just a hot topic these days
talk about
in Australia.
That's all we talk about all the time.
I know.
But Australia, Australia like so positive about regulation? Like why is it easier? Can we copy the same laws here in the US that you have in Australia?
It's an attitude thing, I would say. And Jackson can talk much, much better to this. But I think Australia has just allowed a very open space to develop. And Australia was quite early in April 2018 with some sort of regulation. And that was when the Transaction Monitoring Authority, AUSTRAC, was regulating the service, the digital currency exchanges. So every crypto company just registered as a cryptocurrency exchange. And they have to report transactions. It's a very light touch. And it's been very collaborative. And right now there are a lot of discussions going on. There are consultation papers going around with the government, token mapping exercises by the government. So it's a very collaborative approach. And crypto companies were just able to thrive. But Jackson, you're much closer to it with your Blockchain Australia. I think you're on the board of Blockchain Australia Industry Association as well.
Yeah, thanks. I'm happy to share a bit of color here. So I would absolutely credit the progress and the success in Australia to the attitude that our regulators have or that government has, and that can vary depending on the agency. But the most successful example is, as Holger described, our AML regulator in Australia called AUSTRAC. It's a federal regulator, so we don't have separation by states.
That makes it a lot easier, too.
The process they went about regulating, yeah, absolutely. Dealing with one is a lot better than dealing with 50. The process was, let's find a industry association, which at the time, Blockchain Australia, non-for-profit industry association. The only focus is advocacy for blockchain, crypto, Bitcoin, anything in that space. And they would run consultation sessions with associations who then bring industry members in. And by industry members, I mean companies. So there would be exchanges, there'd be crypto projects. These days, there are some NFT projects. But everyone is basically given access to the table where we get to have a conversation with the regulator. The regulator comes in and says, look, we think this space should be regulated. Here are some potential rules that we think we should be introducing. What do you guys think about it? How would you actually implement these rules if we impose them upon you? That is a very crucial question. And they were willing to ask that question, right? So Blockchain Australia was able to support and get the feedback from all the members like, okay, if we had to comply with these rules, if we had to do KYC on our customers, if we had transaction monitoring, what are the systems in place that we need? Do we need to be able to speak to each other? Yes or no? Are there readily available industry solutions or like software that we can license to do these things? All these questions gets asked in a room where all the stakeholders are able to contribute their voice. So that was successful in 2018. We hope that on the financial services side, we get the same thing. But there's progress there. We're looking at custody and exchange licensing in the next 12 months or so. But I would absolutely attribute the success to the willingness to have a dialogue with the industry.
Yeah.
Oh, and after that as well, even after AUSTRAC, I have to give credit to the regulators because everyone just like rags on them all the time. Even after implementing the new rules, every single year, AUSTRAC would invite the associations back in and have a round table and say, hey, how is everyone going? Here are the trends we're seeing. We're seeing maybe this type of fraud come up. How are we going to stamp it down together? So it's an ongoing dialogue and it's very collaborative. So I have to give credit to that. And hopefully we get to see more of that around the world.
It's almost like because the regulators don't have to worry about infighting with each other, that they can actually have time to regulate and provide guidance.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Shocker.
Yes. Makes me want to move to Australia.
Oh, it's a nice place.
Well, thanks, guys. Thanks for taking the time and coming on the show today. I really appreciate it. It's been enlightening. It's been fun talking to you guys here in the Upside Down.
Awesome. Thank you, Charlie.
Charlie.
I'll see y'all later. Bye.
Ready for a new and exciting career challenge? At DHL Supply Chain, you're part of a team committed to creating innovative solutions for some of the biggest brands in the world. We're recognized as a best place to work, where people are valued, supported, and respected. DHL Supply Chain is hiring for a wide range of salaried operational and functional roles. Previous experience in logistics is welcome, but not required. All opportunities, no boundaries. DHL Supply Chain. Apply today at joindhl.com.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.